The first reading is taken from Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralysed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted.
Habakkuk. Another one of those not very well known or preached on books. Yet, it's in the Bible. Paul quotes from it in Romans and in Galatians, and the writer of the Hebrews also quotes. And we do need to remember that when we talk about the minor prophets, they're not minor in importance. It's just about the size of the prophecy. So what is Habakkuk all about? Well, when I started thinking about it, I looked back on my computer and I could see notes that I made a number of years ago. So I know we did it in the house group a few years ago, but I'd forgotten what it was all about. I did, however, remember that Martin Lloyd-Jones wrote a book on it called From Fear to Faith. And I thought, well, if that title is a good summary of the book, then it's well worth studying. It's actually less of a prophecy in the normal sense. Normally, the prophet hears from God, passes the message on to the people. Here in Habakkuk, it's almost the opposite. It's more of a dialogue between the prophet and God, where Habakkuk actually starts off by having a bit of a rant at God. So let's just set the scene. We don't know exactly when Habakkuk lived. Some of the other prophets, their opening verses actually tell us what kings were reigning at the time they prophesied. So we have a pretty good idea of those dates. We don't have that with Habakkuk. But we sort of, by looking at it, we can work out, I think, pretty accurately when Habakkuk was speaking. On the service sheet, you've got a timeline. It doesn't come out very well in that small thing. If we'd had the overhead and PowerPoint, it would have been up on the screen. Those of you who followed our studies in Micah and Nahum will be familiar with this. At the top there, it's the Northern Kingdom of Israel. In the days after Kings Saul, David, and Solomon, the kingdom was divided. The northern kingdom, which was about 10 of the tribes, they ended up with a series of bad kings and ended up being exiled to Assyria. The southern kingdom fared rather better. They had a mixture of good and bad kings. What I tried to do there was underline the names of the good kings, just to give you a feel for it. And I've taken off some of the dates that I had originally because they weren't sure. But Jeremiah, if you look down the right-hand end, we have dates for him. And it looks like Habakkuk, Nahum, and Zephaniah are in that same sort of period. Maybe Nahum's a bit earlier. But it's the period probably just following the reign of Josiah. Josiah was the last of the good kings of Judah. His father and grandfather were pretty awful kings, and the country was in a bad state when he came to the throne, when he was still quite young. And sometime after that, they actually found the book of the law in the temple. Can you imagine that? Here's God's people, and they find the book of the law in the temple. It's almost just sounded as if they didn't even know it was lost, but didn't even know it existed. So Josiah did set out on a series of reforms. Sadly, when he died, the reforms were very quickly forgotten. And we read a lot about that in Jeremiah, that the country is in a particularly bad state. And I think this, it looks like this is where Habakkuk comes in, sometime around about the end of Josiah's reign. The remaining kings, I've just put dots on the timeline there. There were a bunch of, one of them was even a puppet king under Egypt. I got a quote from somewhere and I can't even remember where I got it. But times of bad kings correspond with the times of good prophets. Don't know whether that's always exactly true, but that's an interesting point. So let's look at the opening verses of Habakkuk. Clearly, Habakkuk has been praying for some time about a subject. Verse 2, how long, O Lord, must I call for help? He is bemoaning the state of Judah in his day. If you read the service sheet, you'll see I give this the title of What's Driving Habakkuk Mad? Well, it was the state of the country, the state of Judah, God's people, remember. But also, he's questioning what appears to be God's indifference. To say, how long, O Lord, is not an unusual thing in the Bible. We read that the verses like that in Psalms, Isaiah, Revelation. There's a serious problem in Judah with God's people. There is, if you look at the verses, there's injustice, there's destruction, there's violence. The wicked among God's people, keep remembering that, are persecuting the righteous. And it's driving Habakkuk mad. Again, if we read Jeremiah, we get an awful lot more information on it. Even worse, though, for Jeremiah, he can't understand why God's allowing it to continue. After all, these are God's chosen people. It seems that Habakkuk's theory or theology of God's justice and righteousness is not being reflected in what he sees as God's activity, or rather in God's inactivity, so it seems. In verse 4 we have the word therefore, which obviously links to what the verses that go before, but I think it also says it's because he thinks God's being inactive that therefore we have the problem that's described in verse 4. You're not doing anything odd. Look what's happening. The law is paralyzed. Justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. The main problem seems to be that there's no justice. The word justice appears twice in verse 4. Injustice in verse 3, although the Hebrew word there is a more general word and most other translations do something more general like wickedness or iniquity. The NIV have chosen injustice, that probably because of verse 4, that the lack of justice is the big problem. The law in some way is paralyzed. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. In fact, it has become perverted or twisted. Not only are the wicked not being punished, but the righteous are being thwarted. They can't get the justice they need. So why is God not listening? Why is he not acting? As I said, my title was, What's Driving Habakkuk Mad? But actually, God has a plan.
God's response to Habakkuk's moaning. Look at the nations and watch, and be utterly amazed. I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law themselves and promote their own honour. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. they fly like an eagle swooping to devour. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on. Guilty people whose own strength is their God. Thanks be to God for his word. Amen.
So, the state of the nation is driving Habakkuk mad, and why is God not acting? Well, Habakkuk was a bit luckier than Job. He didn't have to wait, it seems, quite so long for an answer. We don't know how long he was praying, though. But he gets an answer. But God doesn't answer the why. Why is this happening? Why are you not acting? Nor particularly the how long, although he does say, in your days. So God's going to do something and not have to wait too long for it. Now, sometimes we want to tell God, if you like, what the answers to our prayers should be. But it doesn't always work like that. And that is certainly the case for Habakkuk. Look at God's response. Verse 5. Look. Don't just look. Watch. Observe. Take it in. Be amazed. Where it says utterly amazed, the Hebrew repeats the word. Be amazed. Be amazed. God is working. But he's about to do something quite unexpected. In fact, if someone had predicted it, they would not have been believed. Even if the people of Judah could already see the power, the growth of the Babylonian power, because it was about this time that Babylon defeated the Assyrians, who were the big power beforehand. If they had known about that growth, they would probably have thought, it can't happen to us. We are God's people. In fact, let me read a verse from Jeremiah, speaking about the false prophets. They have lied about the Lord. They said, he will do nothing. No harm will come to us. We will never see sword or famine. But God answers, and what he says is even more mysterious, if you like, than his apparent lack of answer to Habakkuk's prayer. Paul quotes verse 5 at the end of one of his sermons in the synagogue, telling the people that God had not been idle in their day either. And he said much the same. He was going to do something unexpected that they wouldn't believe. In Paul's day, people had already struggled to believe that Jesus was the Messiah. And if you told them the Romans were going to come and defeat them and basically take them into a much longer exile, they probably wouldn't have believed him. Again, we're God's people. We're okay. So, what is God's unexpected solution? Verse 6. God is raising up the Babylonians for the very issue that Habakkuk is concerned about. Now, that wouldn't be the Babylonians' view. They're not giving God credit for it. They're doing what they're doing because of their own strength, as we shall see. So, keep that in mind as more details about the Babylonians emerge. Habakkuk has, quite rightly, been concerned with God's people. But God's view is much wider than that. You'll be familiar with the first verse of Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. And in Job we read, he makes the nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations and disperses them. Now note what God has to say about these Babylonians that he is going to use for his purposes. Verse 6, ruthless and impetuous. The King James and the RSV use bitter and hasty. Remember, it's God that's describing them in this way. The picture is of a conquering people with no thought for their victims. You see in verse 6, seizing dwelling places not their own. Now that's interesting comparison with what was said to the children of Israel before they went into the promised land. I'll read some verses, a couple of verses from Deuteronomy. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, a land with large flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant. Now the roles are reversed. The Babylonians are going to do the opposite, if you like, to the people of Judah. The Babylonians will take what is not theirs. Their only right to it is their strength. Verse 7. Habakkuk and the people of Judah would be well aware of the reputation of the Babylonians having destroyed Nineveh and the Assyrians, the big power before them, in a very sudden and complete way. Mere mention of the Babylonians will put fear into the hearts of potential victims. Verse 7 again, they're a law unto themselves. Their justice is hardly what Habakkuk would recognize as justice. Their justice is might is right. Which is the irony. God is using a wicked and unjust nation to do what? To deal with the wickedness and injustice in Judah that's driving Habakkuk mad. These Babylonians don't fear God or anywhere else. They don't even really fear their own polytheistic gods. If you glance down at verse 11, you'll see that their own strength is their God. They are self-important, answerable to no one. Verse 8, their horses and horsemen are described in extreme terms, indicating the ferocity and wantonness of their abilities. Interesting that the animals to which the cavalry are compared are all unclean by the laws of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. So that would emphasize that they are such an unlikely choice as God's instrument. Verse 7, the Babylonians' main thrust is violence. Another irony here, because it's the same word used earlier in the chapter that Habakkuk uses when describing the people of Judah. What the people of Judah were doing to each other. They will take captives like sand. Sand is used in the Bible for numberless, especially of the people of God. And we know that eventually most of Judah were taken into exile into Babylon. And verses 10 and 11. The Babylonians are a force to be reckoned with, and they know it. They fear no one. They mock the defences put up against them. But just as the people of Judah were not expecting to be punished by God, neither were the arrogant Babylonians, but in due course they were. There are historic documents in which Nebuchadnezzar extols his own greatness and achievements. And if you know Daniel chapter 4, you know what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. So, God is using an arrogant, wicked, and guilty nation to deal with arrogant, wicked, and guilty Judah. Unexpected answer from God. Unexpected means used by God. So, Habakkuk got an answer to his prayer, but it wasn't the one he was expecting. What did he think about it? We'll pick that up in 2 weeks' time.